Well, good morning, and this is our second lesson for the day, but for our second lesson, we have a guest speaker. His name is Nick Santakis, and he's an architect, and he is the architect that has been chosen to build our church. And as you probably know, many of you know, we have a plot of land on Guadalupe and Burke in Gilbert, and that's the place that we'll be building our facility, and it can accommodate a 5,000 square foot footprint, and it'll give us a chance to have a center for spiritual nourishment where we can welcome people to study the Word of God. Now, I know you've all heard of the story of David and Goliath, and in Gilbert, Barah Ministries is definitely the David. We're the little guy, and there are a lot of Goliath churches in the area. But we have a very simple mission, and that is to pursue truth from the Word of God, to treat the Word of God as what it is, treat the Bible as what it is, which is the exact thinking of the Lord Jesus Christ, and to teach what it says without embellishing it or changing it or feeling the need to interpret it. And we'd like to share that gift and the gift of the gospel message with people all throughout our community and eventually all throughout the world. And I think this center of spiritual nourishment that we're going to build is going to give us a chance to do that. And Nick, in my opinion, is the perfect person to do this for us. He has built other churches. He is brilliant, as far as I'm concerned, in giving us the maximum for the least amount. He is very creative as an architect, and he really knows how to create beautiful looks in buildings that don't cost an arm and a leg. And so I think you'll really enjoy meeting him. I'd like him to share with you things he's done and the way he looks at things, and then you can ask him any questions you'd like to ask him. I think you'll find him to be very fun and personable and a real gentleman. So, Nick, come on up and tell them all about yourself and what you do.
Morning. Is this working now? Yes. Pastor Clark, thank you for inviting me today, and thanks for everyone being here to listen to what I have to say. Is this okay? You're able to hear? My name is Nick Santakis. I was born on the northwest coast of Crete in Greece in the mid-50s, and my family decided to emigrate to Canada in the late 50s. I was 3 and a half when they felt that after the war, the opportunities there were not going to be great for their kids, and I'm the oldest of three brothers, and we were emigrated to Montreal, where our relatives happened to live at that time. And when we got there, and it was February of 1959, I saw snow for the first time in my life. I was 3 and a half, but I remember it vividly. And I was educated there, and I went to school at McGill University, School of Architecture. I also happened to live through Expo 67 in Montreal. It was an international exhibition, which I found fascinating. There are many buildings from around the world. Excellent designs and innovative structures. I've experienced Montreal, the old city, the new city, and decided when I graduated from university that I was going to practice there. So after graduating in 1978, when I first got registered 3 years later, I started my own practice and commenced knocking on doors and making things happen. And what happened basically was it took a long time to get established. I was also very young when I started. I was 25, and a lot of people did not want to give me the opportunities because I was a young kid, figuring I didn't have much experience and so on, and I had to start from the ground up. I got my opportunity to design. My first project was a restaurant for my family, which my brothers still operate. It's 33 years now, and it's actually become a Montreal institution. And designed many, many restaurants. You know, being Greek at the time, that was basically the Greek community. They owned restaurants, and at the time, they were just basically required to get a floor plan so they could maybe get a permit. They did not think about design; it wasn't important to them. So I decided, you know what, I'm going to make something out of it. Okay, it's just maybe not getting paid too much, but I'm going to make sure that these projects are going to be special. Started doing restaurants, and then at one time, 3 years into it, this project came up, a senior citizen's residence was six stories. It was a $5.5 million building, and I was 28 at the time, and it was impossible to think of a 28-year-old kid getting a project of that size. When I was in school, my thesis was a project which was where the school I used to go to. It was a community center, school, and senior citizens' residence. The community center and school were built, and actually that was a project brought into the firm that I was working at the time. And then when I left that firm a bit later, in 3 years, that old age home came up. When I presented myself to the president of the community, I said, you know, Mr. Maris, I'm only 28, but I can do this project. He said, you know, at your age, Alexander the Great had conquered the entire known world. So it made me feel very encouraged, and they gave me like a few weeks to come up with a $5.5 million design. Ended up, the entire building committee resigned because it was unheard of to give a project of that size to a kid of this that age. And eventually they became all my friends after the building was built and so on. And that's been the story, the tribulations of my life. So thank you, Roy, for reminding me of all of this. 15 years into it, I had completed about 200 projects in Montreal. And we had a referendum in Quebec with the government wanted to secede from Canada. So this was the second referendum. There was one in 1980, which was 60-40 against that. So I figured, okay, it's not going to happen. I'm going to stay there and establish my business. Then 15 years later, this comes up again. All of a sudden, I'm saying to myself, I can't stay here. I can't have my kids growing up in this type of society. What's going to happen in the future? They're going to be faced with the same problems. So I decided that night that I'm out of Montreal and Quebec. I'm going to leave. I didn't know where I was going to go, but I decided that that was the end of it. So in 3 weeks after that, I arrived in Arizona. I was going to visit Phoenix, Dallas, Atlanta, and North or South Carolina, in that order. I came here, it was midnight or 11 o'clock at November 25th. I wasn't able to see anything. And then the next morning when I got out of the hotel room, I thought I was in Crete, in Greece. I went back into the room, I called my wife, said, Sue, I'm staying here. She says, what? Are you crazy? You don't know anybody. You don't know anybody in Arizona. I said, so what's the difference? It doesn't matter. I feel at home here. And I proceeded again, 15 years later in tribulations, to start another practice without knowing anyone in this community. It wasn't that easy, but at the same time, I had a lot of hope, you know, perseverance and hope and so on, because I really felt that if you're not comfortable where you are, there's no reason why you have to take it and stay there. And I felt that there's something better out there for me. I didn't want to have these limitations of discrimination because I'm not part of the French-speaking community. As we're called allophones, that means talking another language other than English and French and so on. Meanwhile, I worked in three languages every day. I never did drawings in English until I came to Arizona, believe it or not, because it would never have been permitted. So we're living with that constantly and basically getting work only from ethnic minorities and not from the general population. That really bothered me. So coming here, I said, well, I'm starting all over again, but at least I will not have those limitations anymore. So here I am, 200 projects later in Arizona. So right now, I'm still practicing a little bit in Montreal. I do projects there that are basically from clients from the past that asked me to come in and work on them. I'm doing one church right now that's under construction, and you'll see that soon. But mostly, what I wanted to say is that architecture is about creating solutions for different problems. And an architect is a director of a project, but at the same time, as an architect, you have to take the input of your clients to be able to design the proper structure for them. And I can design any type of building on the site that Rory is talking about, but without your input, it's not going to become your building. So what we have to do is basically have a dialogue. Take what you need and put that into a form of a building that is going to satisfy your needs. So basically, when you're designing a church, what does it come down to? It's, first of all, it starts with the religion of the church, because you may be Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox. You could be other types of religions, so you have to follow certain doctrines of the religions. Then there's the geography, where this building is going to be built. Is it going to be a cold climate, a moderate climate, a warm climate? And here we have an extremely warm climate, so you have to design accordingly. Then is the topography of the site. Is this site a flat site? Is it a slope site? Does it have views? And so on. What are the conditions in zoning of the property? What does the city allow in terms of the height restrictions, the amount of levels, the parking regulations, and so on, landscaping and all of these issues that you have to deal with? Then you have, what is the program of the building? How big is the building going to be? What type of spaces are you going to have? What are the optimal sizes of these spaces? The circulation, how it flows, and also designing the proper construction system that is going to be efficient and not waste money. At the same time, basically give you no maintenance issues for the future. As well, then you have the budget. Budget is extremely important, because if you design a building that's twice the budget of what the client has, then you have failed in what you're doing. You have to be able to, as an architect, to create a building that is going to fit the budget of your client. At the same time, when you're designing, you have to design with the budget in mind, because if you're designing without that, and we go to the preliminary stage and give out drawings for bidding, and we find that this building is twice the amount, then it doesn't help anybody. So we have to start all over again. So what I want to do is give you some examples, first of all, of some buildings around the world, different churches. You may be familiar with the Chapel of the Rock in Sedona. I think that's probably a church that is very well integrated into its landscape. This is a building that was designed and built 60 years ago, believe it or not, and looks as fresh today as it ever did. And it's a very powerful statement with the cross and so on. But again, it could have very easily gone the other way. This building could have looked ridiculous. So the architect has to really understand how to work with materials and work with the structure and the aesthetics to make it look right. This is another building in France. It's a cathedral. It's a very contemporary. It looks like it's folded paper and so on. But again, it's quite a dynamic shape. Also very expensive. This is the interior of that church. This is a building here in Chandler. This could have been a medical clinic, could have been an office building, could be anything. And right now, it's basically a church. Now, I don't know if it was designed as a church originally, or was it a building that was modified into a church. I'm not sure. But at the same time, the building that we will be designing also has to be maybe ready for future uses, in the case that if this building were ever to be sold and not to lose its value, if it can be transformed into a different type of building with very little cost, it would have greater value. But at the same time, I think it should look like a church, and this building here does not look like a church. This is more of a contemporary church as well. But again, a building like this may have possibilities of becoming something else. And it's a good example of contemporary architecture, again, with some flexibility built in, great use of exterior landscaping. So the interior and exterior working together, especially in Arizona, is quite important. We have the opportunity here. We don't have this severe cold weather, so we can take advantage of our nice climate throughout the year and be able to work with the exterior and interior at the same time. This is another church in Italy, which is, again, kind of dramatic and extremely expensive as well. And here's some churches. As you see, the top one in St. Louis, which could be almost like a little office building or a little shopping center that was converted or can be converted into that. And then in the lower part in Illinois, that's another more conventional type of building. Again, another church that's more contemporary. Again, this building here doesn't have too many uses other than being a church. some more, one in Saskatchewan on the left. Again, that's, again, very, it's a church building that its only use would be as a church, and the evangelical church on the right, again, same thing. And that's an artist's rendering on the right. And you'll see what we work with, renderings that are actually very realistic, and you'll see examples of this in our projects. But not initially, because technology has aided us today, but my first church back in 1990, you'll notice that the drawings are different than what we do today. This is a church in Norway, again, very strong, strong form. Another church in Seattle, Washington, contemporary, reflective pool, and so on. Then there's some churches here. This one is on Shea, the cathedral. I don't know if some of you have driven by it in Scottsdale. There's Ronchamp, which is a famous church by Le Corbusier. He's a Swiss-French architect from the early 20th century. And there's another church in Florida. Again, interior of a Roman Catholic church in Ontario, in Canada. And again, examples of church interiors with choirs.
There's June's dream.
Yeah. June's, you're going to get a bigger choir, June.
A choir.
Another church in Texas. Again, you see the interiors vary from, depending on, again, topography, the religion, and so on. This is the first church I designed back in 1990. This is a watercolor. So our renderings at the time were basically drawn by hand. And this gave the congregation an example of what this building would look like. And, you know, they understood that this would be a brick building, stone with stone and so on. And the overall shape was fairly well understood. But today we have better tools than even this, even though it's a very nice rendering. And I'll show you some examples of that later. This church went from the renderings and then became the reality, the built structure that you see here. This was done in 1991. It's already 23 years old. I'm in the process right now of doing a stained glass window on the sides of the church. And on the upper dome, they have done all of the iconography. They've completed it. So it's a work in progress. It's churches, when you start with the exteriors, then the interior, especially in Orthodox churches, they have iconography and so on. It costs millions of dollars before they're actually completed. And it takes over a period of years. So right now, even in terms of maintenance, this building, the roof of the building has to be redone because of the metal has basically been worn down. And what they want to do ultimately is to create a round dome instead of a polygonal dome. At that time, they did not have the money. So when we're going to be redoing the metal and going with material like copper instead of painted metal, we're going to also create a rounded dome, and they've saved up the money for that. These are some details. There's going to be stained glass on the upper portion that you see there. And there's the church from the front. There's an area of the dome which has been all painted with iconography now. Another project which we got involved with here back in 1998 was St. Catherine Greek Orthodox Church and Community Center in Chandler. So these buildings are on Dobson, just south of Elliott. So you can actually drive by and see them. It was a three-phase project that started in 1998. The first phase was the community center, which was built in 1998. The second phase was a charter school that was built here. It has basically 12 classrooms, and it was built in 2000. And the main church was designed in 2002 and completed in 2008. So this entire project took a period of 10 and a half years and was basically designed with the future buildings in mind. Even though I had no idea what the program would be for the future buildings, when I would design a second phase and a third phase, it had to match the original building. This is a view of the completed project, where the original building was the community center, this was a school, and that was the church. In this case, because it being a Greek Orthodox church, the altar had to face the east, so these really are the rear end of the buildings facing the street. So this is the rear of the building, and you have to drive around the back, and you see the front of the buildings. Again, this is the rear. This is the community center, which is phase one. The school is phase two, and the church, phase three. And you see there's a rounded dome here, and that's what they want to do in Canada now, since they have the budget for it. This is the church around the back, so that's the facade of the church. And again, using local materials, we have stucco. We have some block, which is stained in the color that we want. And we have a tile roof. So basically, it's a low-maintenance building. We know that, you know, buildings like this, if they require a lot of maintenance, it's very difficult for people in the community to actually put up the money all the time and to actually follow through with it. So I like to design the buildings to be as low-maintenance as possible. And this will not need any. Maybe the roof may need to be changed in 20 or 30 years, but everything else, if you maybe paint the outside periodically. This is the interior of the church where you enter. This is called the narthex, and then you go through the narthex to the main church itself. This is what you see, and right now there's more iconography. So this all has iconography, and then they're going to do the dome. But just to do the iconography in the dome is like $750,000. So these are, you know, works in progress. This is viewed from the altar to the front. And there's a mezzanine here, second level, where you can have a congregation as well. And now we're going to my Montreal project. This church is a project that came to me recently. It was in a site in the inner city, an area where I used to live. I was selected as the architect of that. This site basically was, there was an existing church here that this little community had purchased, but the building was so big and they were not able to actually do anything with or maintain the building. They did not have the funds, so what happened is they were forced to demolish the building from the city. The city said, you can demolish the building and we'll buy the land from you. But said, we don't want you to just purchase our land. What we'll do is we will give you 60% of the lot that you can build a city park, and you'll give us 40%, this sliver of land, where we'll build a smaller church that they can actually handle. So this is what has happened, and they got compensated with $750,000 for the portion of land that they sold to the city, and that gave them half of the funds that they need to build their church. In this church, because it's a very small, but basically it's 6,500 feet on three levels. The basement has a small hall and all of the bathrooms. There's an elevator that communicates on all three floors and the mechanical room in the back, and there's also a kitchen there presently. Then the main hall is the church itself, and you see the elevator. There's a priest's office there, candles and so on. And then there's a second level where there's more office space and the mezzanine level overlooking the ground floor. Now, these are the type of drawings that we do today. This is a 3D rendering of the actual finished product. And you'll see with the drawings that I'm going to be showing, it's quite descriptive, so everybody understands it. And builders, what they can do is actually price it from very closely from our preliminary, so we don't have to go through a set of construction drawings to find out what this building is going to cost. We know from before we start that, and if we're going to make any changes, that we know what the budget, it'll fit our budget or not. The city knows, what is it going to be as far as if there's a design review like there was over here, because we had to get a special permit for this because of the tightness of the land, what materials we're using, and so on. A view from the air where you see the city park. We have not designed it, so the city's going to do the design. So we just showed something very generic, but showed how the church works with the rest of the land. And this is an aerial view here. Another aerial view. Same thing. So we go around. Then we also have animations that fly around. You can see this building in animated in 3D, and then you can go into the interior of it. This is one of the sides of the church. This is going around the rear. And then what you see from the park. And then the interiors. These will be the actual interiors of the church itself. So the congregation understands, well, what will they actually be sitting in. This is a view from the mezzanine. Another view from the altar to the front. Mezzanine itself. And another view of the church. So basically, what I wanted to say is that these buildings did not come out of my imagination only. They came from input from the congregation that we were dealing with. And it's a long process. It's something that we have to discuss. I would come here after we have our preliminary meetings about spaces and so on. I'd come back here with floor plans, and we'd discuss that and get more input before we get to the stage of going to massing like we have here. And even in massing, we would have preliminary massing, which would be black and white. So we talk about the forms, and then we'd go to the final drawings that we have here. And that will be used to go through design review with the city of Gilbert, because they want to see everything at one time. It's not going through stages. And many times in other cities, you just work with the site plan and the floor plan. They get that approved, and then they go forward. But they do less design review on the exterior of the buildings. Over here, they want to get a comprehensive idea of the entire project. So we'll be, when we present the city of Gilbert, that's what they'll be getting of Barah Ministries. So any questions? Yeah, well, yeah, it can be done sooner, but just from my experience, knowing from having meetings and going back and forth, I would say a year is a good amount of time, because it should take about 6 months to go through the design to get to that point, and after that, we can do construction drawings, bidding, and so on. So think about a year before you start anything. And it could take longer. I mean, I've got some projects. Depending on the clients, and these are private homes, but you know, things change for them, so they decide to put things on hold. And again, if you have any issues with for your financing and so on, and that will also dictate how long it's going to take. You may not be ready in a year to do this. You may want to take more time, but we will get the permissions and so on in place. Well, that's the other thing. They have to understand what the project is about and what the costs are. And these are the tools we need. I mean, if we don't get into it, we won't be able to satisfy all of the city requirements, and then your investors, and even for you as well, to know what your building will be like. And at the same time, the other thing I wanted to mention is that the building that we'll design here, even though we have a 5,000-foot footprint that we're looking at now, there is space on the land to have future expansion. So we have to make sure that building is capable of being designed in the right way so that any future expansion will work. And so that has to be also pre-programmed into the structure itself. If we're going to have a second floor, how big that will be, and a future extension of the second floor as well. All of these things have to be looked into at this point. Yeah, I wouldn't be as concerned about those houses, because those houses eventually probably will be turned into buildings, institutional buildings like the church, just like the house that you purchased is becoming that because of the zoning. And not too many people are going to invest, I guess, big money in doing important houses on a busier street. So, yeah, I would say it has to fit in, but it doesn't have to look like the houses on either side. So it's not... The aesthetics of it, it should be a building, you know, of what it actually is. And there are other examples of churches on the street that have already been built. So it has to more or less be matching, let's say, the sizes and massing of the other bigger buildings on the street.
Yeah. Have you worked with the city of Gilbert before?
Yes, I have. They're okay. Every city is different. City of Gilbert is actually, I'm a little surprised that they want everything at one time, but they want to be able to shortcut the entire to streamline the process, which is it's a good thing. Maybe, for example, if we get to that level and they have significant changes, well, then that either means that I haven't understood what the city of Gilbert is expecting in terms of their requirements, or that they they have an issue with something aesthetic about the building. But I think, in a way, in the long term, it's better that we don't go through different stages. A lot of cities that go through site plan review first, they accept the site plan, and then they don't have no idea what the actual building will look like, and they don't really care. But so this way, they get to see more of the building, and if they're going to have any comments about it, you'll know it right away. And then we can, you know, obviously make modifications and make sure that everybody is happy. So it doesn't, even if they have something to say about the building, doesn't mean we can't solve it in a way that everybody will, you know, it'll work for everybody. So that's again up to us to really try to make sure that we don't waste time and money. So that's why you need a good architect for this. Okay, that's a very good. That's a very good question, because I've had clients ask me that, and they've tried. If you plant trees, you need to irrigate them. Chances are, it doesn't make sense. When the site work starts here, all those trees and all the irrigation and that will probably be in the way. So, but don't forget, once a building starts construction, it may take a year to a year and a half. So the trees can be planted or earlier at the time during construction. But if we want to do it now and wait 3 or 5 years, we may lose a few of them. I would not. It's not something you normally would see. But a lot of people want that, because by the time they move in, they want the trees to be bigger. We'll maybe select some trees that grow quicker. So that's part of my landscape architecture. Again, that's the other thing. We can't design the landscape before we have the building designed. So what are maybe at the time when the entire package is ready to go into the city of Gilbert and we have the landscape design and we say these are the final locations of trees, we may be able to do something, maybe in the back and so on. But still, I doubt it highly. I would probably wait until construction starts.
God's pretty good at growing trees, though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sometimes he's not fast enough. I want big trees.
Yeah, we gotta get our prayers in early. I think.
Do you utilize recyclable materials?
Yes, as much as we can. And most of the materials today, that's a trend of where everything is going. We don't like wasting materials. And once, you know, if we have the opportunity of using recyclable materials, we do. In the past, it was like a premium. It would cost more money. But today, you'll find it's more of the norm of what you're finding on the market. And also, that's a good point, too, because energy-wise, I'm very conscious about the energy cost of buildings. So when we're designing our structures, we make sure that they're as energy efficient as possible. To me, that's more important than what they look like in many cases. If you have a beautiful looking building and it's losing energy, that's not a good way to design. And there's many ways here in Arizona with shading and so on that you can get passive energy savings.
What direction will our building face?
Well, the building will be facing the street.
Which is that east?
It's north, facing north. I mean, north already is you know, a good way to place the face. The thing is that I'm working with now is where to actually place the building on the site. Do I place it right in front because there's a 45-foot setback, and have parking around the sides and around the back that can get me more parking and more footprint? But then it will limit my use of the outside space, because in the back there will be parking. But at the same time, depending on how that parking is designed, that can also be used as exterior space. Or take the building and set it further back and have a row of parking on the front and along the sides. I have to see which way I'm able to get more footprint of the building for the future, meaning that having to allow me to get more, maximize my parking, and then maximize my footprint. Because I think if we put the building in the wrong place and it's going to become an inefficient use of the actual site, then what's going to happen is that you're landlocked with an inefficient design. So a lot of times the design depends on where you locate a building.
So can you back up to what you were speaking of when you said that there's houses on both sides, and then you spoke to that those houses potentially could not be there 20 years from now?
Well, I don't think they're going to be around too long. They may still stay there. But in order for them to become, to be remodeled as houses, I highly doubt that. People would want to spend money to actually live on that street. I mean, it's a little noisy, and I think that street is more suited to institutional buildings.
Because yeah, that's
very important. St. Catharines was 3 commercial acres, 35,000 feet. The 3 buildings that you saw, and it was right. And there were five acres total on once for to have a street exposure. So we worked with those three commercial acres, 105,000 feet, and we built every single square inch possible. We even were able to our parking, which should have been doubled than what we have, because the church and community center are not used at the same time. The city allowed us to be able to cut our parking requirements in half because they're never used at the same time. Now, to the north, that property was bought by the community because they had a need for more school space. So they bought an existing house that they rented out to the same school that rented the charter school, and across the street, another piece of land for another house, so that charter school owned 2 more buildings next. So they bought that and rented it out to the charter school. But on the south side, there's one house there that the owner, and it's the owner doesn't even live there. They just rent it out. They refuse to sell it. That's the other thing. They refuse to sell it to the community. They said, well, we want an exchange. Well, they could exchange that house for that property for the other property they bought on the other side and be an equal trade. But it's that issue is a religious issue between the homeowner and the Greek Orthodox community. It's more of a personal thing. They know that once we get that piece, we'll have 3 sides, 3 street exposures, which is ultimate. And after that, those 5 acres, there's 5 more acres at the back, which are horse properties from other, which we can purchase there and create 10 acres. So this expansion, if you know that you're going to be growing, it's good to know that on either side of you, at least one side, if not both, are going to be available, but it has to be done. Again, it depends on your neighbors. They may say, you know what, we don't want to sell to Baran Ministries. And then what do? I mean, they can keep a house there and keep renting it out and so on. That's what's happened at St. Catharines. It would be nice to have that property, not that we're going to build anything on, just to clear it out and have just more street exposure would be nice.
We're going
to
make them an offer they can't refuse.
God doesn't work like that.
We're just going to send Susan's mom over there.
So. Yeah, sorry. But look, I mean, for the time being, for a 5,000 to 7,000, 8,000 foot building, you have enough. Yes, sir.
Can I have your card, please?
Yes.
And can I ask you?
Yeah.
What is the budget of this?
Well, what I've been saying is $2 million. I think the building itself would probably be $1 million, and then we'd like to have $1 million in reserve for operating funds. That's my guess.
How many square feet is the lot?
The lot is just shy of an acre. It's 43,300 or 200.
Okay. All right. We've got $8,000 towards it so far.
About. Yeah, not much. But there's a company in Atlanta that if you, for $25,000, they'll come here and they'll determine what we're trying to do, and they'll tell us how much that they could get for us from investors. And then if you wanted to have them do that, then they charge you a small percentage of what you get.
I've seen that happen before.
Badly?
Badly. Can I have a little information about the location?
Absolutely.
Get a chance to see it?
Absolutely.
Do you have a bell tower?
I didn't think of it. You know, we really haven't sat down and thought about what we're going to do.
Thank you. I do like Orthodox architecture quite a bit.
I beg your pardon?
I like Orthodox architecture quite a bit.
Thank you. Yeah, you have to follow certain... It's not a free-form style of architecture. You know, you have to follow certain rules. And it's a little difficult when you start to get to try to modify it slightly to fit some urban situations and to blend in. Depending on the priests or the bishops and so on that you're involved with, some of them are more open to the changes than others.
What are the churches there in the neighborhood there? You mentioned
other
churches.
In Guadalupe?
Just that ADI, that location.
I can't remember. They seem to be, I don't know. I beg your pardon?
I think they're Latter-day Saints.
I believe so. There's some like that, and there may be some others. I just I can't remember right now. But there are, I mean, we have to change the zoning to allow the church, which is not going to be an issue because the precedent has already been set. So that's a good thing, because sometime you know you still have to notify the neighbors, show them your building, and so we need the city support. We had to, when we did St. Catherine's at all phases, you'd be surprised what kind of neighbors come out of that are not even in the 300-foot radius that come in to try to stop, like, the school. They didn't want the school. They didn't want the community center. It was like everyone was a tribulation. Yeah. You know? But you have to just, follow through.
Are you familiar with Hafiz? You know Hafiz out of India?
Hafiz. The name's familiar, but I'm not...
This building over here, the Macy's building,
mm-hmm.
we were going to buy that from someone, and they wouldn't let a church in there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's in certain areas. I mean, it depends again, and then the neighbors can get involved. But anyway, it should not be an issue here, but we need to go through the whole process to be able to present it and get the approvals. But like I said, I don't foresee any problems with them. Any other questions?
I'd like to request a courtyard.
Courtyard? Okay.
Place for weddings, like outside, and a Greek restaurant.
I don't know. They break too many plates in Greek restaurants, so I don't know if you're going to... You have a budget for broken plates. That's not good. Unless you use paper.
Okay.
Then there's no more fun . Well, these are the things we're going to discuss in the next meeting. What should be in this building? What type of spaces and so on, sizes? And then we're going to start turning that into a floor plan.
So can we use it not that this would be the goal, but if we use it as a destination for weddings, if it was really like a nice, beautiful, either Italian or Greek or Tuscan architecture, mm-hmm. that people could choose to get married there and it could be revenue-producing?
The thing that I find is you need to put, we'll talk about kitchen facilities and all of that. All of my church projects have that, But it's something that if you're going to use it for those type of events, there has to be preparation areas also associated with it. It takes some space. St. Catharines, by the way, I was telling Pastor Clark that we can have a site visit to St. Catharines so you can see how the entire complex works. In the community center, there's a hall which seats 400 people, but it's also a basketball court. It can be it has a stage. It has a kitchen facilities that can service 400 plus people. So that's used as a reception hall, and it's rented like every weekend. So these are things we can discuss, but if you don't prepare for that, then if you want to rent it out in the future and say, well, there's no place for us to hold food or to warm it up or for anything, storage is very important. Where do you store if you're going to use it for events? Do you store your tables on site, or do you have to rent them out and they bring in their own, every time they bring their own furniture and so on? So these are things that we can talk about. But I think a site visit to St. Catharines may not be a bad idea so that you can see. It's basically a $6 to $7 million project over a 10-year period, which we can take a look at. It works quite well. You know, the land is used properly. I mean, even the retention basin has become that's where the school kids go and play. And then if there's a flood, I mean, that will fill with water and retain water. And then that's what you have to do also on your site: retain water there before it goes onto the street and so on. So these things have to, you know, will be designed into the structure. All right. Thank you so much. It's been nice being here this morning.